Okay. Hopefully it will stay up.
It will. Hey, welcome everybody. Doing a special addition to Showbiz Blueprint Library here. And it's about writing a book, you know, kind of the five W's. Why would we do it? How do we do it? What do we do with it once we have it? And I asked someone who was a big part of my team when I wrote and launched out my book, I Love Me More Than Sugar. I actually met Sandy in a workshop that I talked about on Showbiz Blueprint a bit, the TV workshop. I met Sandy in there. And after that, I think I was actually playing with the book idea when I went and did that workshop and, you know, just had some stuff written and had a fake cover that I was ready to slap on a book and start doing TV shows. And yep, there I got to do them. And through what I did with Sandy, I finished the book up, something I'm so proud of and gets a lot of, still does a lot of great business for me. And then getting it through the whole Amazon system, getting it listed, turning it into the different forms you can sell it. And, you know, as I talk about in the program here is outsourcing what we're not good at. And that was where she helped me so much. So I asked her if she'd come on here and talk about, you know, kind of how we write the book, what we do with it, and what we would do with it to move it on. So it's great. The group that's gathered here inside of Showbiz Blueprint, there's a another 140, 50 people who will enjoy this and I hope take something from it. And I'm going to turn it over to Sandy and I'll interject. And also we have the ability to kind of jump in with questions on this thing and it's not unruly. So just unmute yourself and jump in if you got something that's live and germane.
Awesome.
And you
awesome.
Guys, you guys on the screen right next to each other on my screens know each other. I found out Lou and Sandy have known each other for like 2 decades, which is awesome.
Oh my gosh. Serrano? Lou Serrano?
Yeah, right next to you. Well, I don't know about on your screen, but right next to you.
No, yeah, I can't see him, but I love him. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
He is one of the people responsible for getting me into magic way back when.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. That's right. Pre balloons and everything.
Right, and I didn't do any intro for Sandy, so I'll just do what I know. But, you know, she's one of us. She's a entertainer. She sets up huge balloon structures. She's been on, what are you up to, like 60 TV shows nowadays?
62, but who's counting?
62, that's a good year. That was my year. So 62 TV shows, including, you know, the big ones, Today Show, and, you know, and everywhere else in the world, and a lot of national TV shows. And
yeah, a couple of Home and Families. Those were actually my favorite, just because with what I'm doing for my YouTube channel and TV is about balloons, do-it-yourself balloons.
Yeah.
So Home and Family hits my audience directly. But yeah, so I had a job today at 3 a.m. That's one of the downfalls of being a professional balloon artist that does large setups is Krispy Kreme had their huge grand opening and it had to be done by 5 a.m. So if I'm a little bit tired, I apologize.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I want to show you this. I guess I should give you guys a quick bio. So I am a magician turned balloon person turned marketer. And it started out that I was just a first grade teacher. And I was in Los Angeles and had started hanging out with a bunch of magicians. And they started teaching me magic. And one thing led to another, and I found balloons, and there was nothing to hide, nothing to flash, and people still went, wow, how did you do that? So, yeah, the rest is history. But this is my first book here, which is The Ultimate Guide to Inflating Your Trade Show Profits, How to Increase Branding, Recognition, Visibility, Customer Loyalty, and Attract More Attention with Balloons. Really long title. But basically, this book was written for the trade show exhibitors and organizers, to help them use balloons effectively and hopefully lead them to hiring me. Mm. And when I decided that I was going to write a book, this was, gosh, I guess 2012. When I decided that I was going to write a book, at first I was really freaked out by the idea and I had no idea where to start. What do I do? You know, oh my gosh, this blank page is just screaming at me. And, anyhow, but I had a bunch of videos that I had put out there on YouTube that were mostly videos answering people's questions. You know, some were how-to videos, some were videos about, you know, best practices, how to use balloons, things like that. And so what I did was I took all those videos and transcribed them. And if you don't have videos, that's okay. You can make videos. If most people are better at talking than they are at writing, or at least they're more comfortable with that medium. So you can talk the questions that people ask you all the time about your industry, not necessarily about your niche itself. Not necessarily about your business itself, but about your niche, about your industry. And so you can start by just writing down those questions that people ask you all the time. and then do a video answering those questions. And so that is what became this book. Is I started out, I just transcribed my videos and then kind of said, okay, well, where are the holes, you know? So biggest marketing mistakes for trade shows, air-filled balloons versus helium, different things like that. So then I said, okay, you know, once I had it all transcribed, well, where do I need more information? And then that was what I sat down and write. And at that point, it pretty much wrote itself. I mean, honestly, I went to Vegas, I locked myself in a room for 3 days, and my book was born. Wow. And then it took another 3 weeks in editing, you know, sending it out to people to edit it and to, you know, show me, to let me know where they thought that maybe there needed to be some more information or whatever. So that took another 3 weeks. And that was my first book. I mean, it really just went just like that. And I've coached a lot of other people through that book writing process. And many of them have found that if they start with just putting down the questions, either that they want people to ask or that people are already asking, and then making just, you know, everybody's got one of these days, right? Yeah. You know, just taking your phone and making a selfie video answering it. It not only gives you, you know, some valuable SEO juice from the backlink coming from YouTube to your website, you know, and it also exposes you to another audience, but it will give you the material for your book.
So let's just unpack that a tad though.
Yeah.
You know, some people get so intimidated by a blank page, and I agree, that's great. What are some other hacks? I'll tell you mine, and I don't know if it came from you or in the workshop that we were in where we were locked in the room, but when it came time to write, my brain worked really well by writing the table of contents. I just wrote my table of contents and then spent, you know, a little bit of time filling in the chapters, what they should be.
Yeah. So for some people that works really well too. I find that for most people, especially creative people, a brain dump works really well. Like just get out everything that you're thinking. Don't worry about trying to make it in any order. Don't worry about trying to number it. Just get it out of your head and in any form onto paper or onto the computer. Mm. And then start picking it apart and attack each concept one by one. So, I mean, for somebody who's kind of got a little bit better picture of what they want to say, maybe a little bit better organized, starting with the table of contents is great. For others who maybe have it a little bit more jumbled, you know, just doing that brain dump and then picking it apart and saying, okay, this one's really important. You start to prioritize and maybe from there create that table of contents.
Gotcha. Okay. So the brain dump, the table of contents, you heard of anything else that works? Any other?
Well, I mean, we're all entertainers here, so, you know, most people should light up more when they're on screen and find that they've got more to say, but if you need extra help, maybe even have somebody interview you.
Yeah, interview.
Get a friend to throw that question to you so that you don't have to write down the answers, but you can just create the question, right. And then, you know, and then, oh, well, you know, people often ask me, do balloons need anything special when they're outside? As a matter of fact, you know, and just like that. And so that way you can, if you're a verbal or auditory processor, that will cue you to get your you know, concepts together.
Yeah. That's three great ways to kind of jumpstart the blank page.
Yeah. So, and I think that's really where people get the most overwhelmed with the idea of writing a book is just, I don't know what to say. I don't like to write, you know? So if you get yourself past that, then it comes together. I mean, it still works, you know, don't get me wrong. Like the editing process itself can make you want to tear your hair out. Because how many times can you read the same thing? And then like all of a sudden, you know, it's like almost printed and you see a huge mistake that you haven't seen the 50 times you read it before. But, that's how you get started.
You touched on a little very bit of it at the beginning, but everyone on here knows that I love to kind of, big Simon Sinek fan. I kind of love to talk about why we even do this up front. So
yeah.
We talked about this a bit in Celebrity Launchpad, of course. You know, we spent a lot of time on it. But what are some of the big reasons why entertainers, you know, the likes of us, would want to write a book?
It's really your leverage. It is. You know that you're good, right? And in the entertainment world, of course, we've got our sizzle reels and things like that. But when you are able to present to somebody your book, whether or not they even read it, and I'll be honest, you know, a lot of times they don't. Yep. But when you're able to present them your book, their opinion of you just goes up a few notches. Like, oh, wow, you know, they must be good. They have a book. Now I know that they're serious. Yep. And in the entertainment world, there's not that many of us who have done it. I mean, it's still kind of you know, kind of an unexplored territory. I mean, in the world of real estate and doctors and, you know, some of those more serious kind of boring businesses, there's a lot of people
have,
and even for them, it's still an amazing leverage tool. But in our world, you know, I mean, for me to be able to say to my clients, well, yeah, you know, I'm an expert on balloons. You know, in fact, you might even say I've written the book on it because I did, you know? And so I've got 5 books out now.
Man,
which I just realized I only got 3 of them sitting here next to me.
This is a great one written by an entertainer.
Oh, awesome. I don't have that one.
It's not me. That's the great thing. This is a comedian named Barry Friedman who lives in Tulsa. He's an amazing guy. He's written 2 books. The first one is all about, it's called Road Stories. And it's, oh my gosh, it's everything who's ever worked a comedy club needs that. But yeah, what this thing did for him, and I, we met on Facebook. We have a Facebook group called My Name is Barry Friedman. There's 6 of us in it. And it's amazing.
Oh my God, that is too funny.
But he's one of the people, and boy, what the book did for him, just as far as backroom sales, even at comedy clubs, just on the way out of a club, people buy because he's just headlining killed. So
yeah,
no, well, so back of room too.
I know we've got all kinds of entertainers that are part of your group, but for the magicians, like what about Mark Wilson, right?
Yeah.
I mean, his book was kind of sold everywhere and that was pretty huge. So, you know, one of my books is for event planners on how event planners can get more out of working with their balloon professionals. So if I'm working with a planner, then that's the book that I'm going to give to them.
Oh, interesting. Let me process it. For event planners, how to get more out of your entertainment.
Out of your balloon professional. So I interviewed 3 event planners. And so here's another hack to writing a book. You know what? You don't have to do it all by yourself. You can interview your friends. Mm. You can interview your friends and then you can print their, you know, with their permission, of course, make sure that they're aware of what you're doing from the get-go. But then you can just transcribe those interviews and turn that into a book. So I interviewed 3 event planners and 9 other balloon artists, basically giving advice on how an event planner could really get the most out of working with a balloon artist, right? Because what so many of us get is somebody's going to just call and say, hey, how much is your arch? And, you know, if you don't dig into it, an arch may not be the most appropriate thing. And so that's really kind of what I want it to get out there to the event planners. Use your balloon person as a partner. And listen to their expertise. Tell them what you're trying to do with the event, what you're going for, what areas you need to create focal points on, and then let your balloon artist suggest things that you may not have thought of.
So that book, you're not looking for sales on that. That's a reputation authority builder for you.
That's a reputation authority, although it actually does sell.
Really?
I mean, not as much as my DIY books, but it does sell a handful every month.
Interesting. Wow. Very cool.
Yeah. So, and when I give that one to a planner, you can just see it. It's like, oh, I'm no longer, oh, that balloon lady, I'm somebody, you know, oh, wow, I really got the best. That's great. I'm so glad I have you. So,
How do you think this lines up, or is it just a great partner to move forward with, but as far as having a very active blog for the event industry? I mean, a book is a great separator.
I think that having a great blog is great. I think that anything that you do that's leveraging you and putting you out there in a way that's different from everybody else is very valuable. I don't think that it's either or. If you have a blog, you can just go into your past blog posts, you know, transcribe them down, and then that becomes a book, which in fact, my dad has a newspaper. Yeah. And it's online now. It used to be a published newspaper, now it's online. And so that's exactly what he's doing. He's taking a series of stories that he's written going across the 8. I'm in San Diego, so the 8 freeway. Right. And he like stopped at all these different stops along the way and written stories about it. And so he's taking those stories and collating them. And that's going to become a book.
Oh, I love that. That's fun. And probably sell them along rest stops on Highway 8.
Right. Sure. I mean, you know, all kinds of things. He goes,
awesome.
You know, to a lot of groups and things like that.
Really cool.
So there's a lot of different ways. I mean, you don't have to, your book doesn't have to be a tell-all how-to. It doesn't have to be for DIYers. Think about who is the audience that you want to impress. Is it the soccer mom who hires you? Mm. Is it the event planner who hires you? Is it, the rest of your industry? Whoever it is, think first. That is one thing that you do want to think about, is who is the target of this book? And then, you know, select the pieces from either what you've already got going on or you know, create something accordingly that is going to put that information out there, so that you know, when you can send it to them, even as a way of prospecting, right? I mean, who doesn't open a box from Amazon? If you were to send, let's say you're trying to get into a really difficult agency or planner or something like that, so you can send them straight from Amazon a copy of your book, right? And you get, like, I don't know, two lines or whatever on the gift receipt,
right?
I'd love to talk to you about this event, my phone number.
And I'm a bonehead. I've never done that, and my gosh, I meet so many people in the sugar-free world, but I'm doing more traditional things. But yeah, and plus we probably even get a we get a commission back when we buy.
You get a commission back on it. Yes, you get your royalty back on it.
I was just thinking, we get our own royalty.
And so, I mean, you know, if you're having trouble with the gatekeeper, like, that will get through, you know. So,
it's a really good idea. Yeah.
And so I am one of the only balloon people at this point. I don't know how many you have in the circle that has books out. And you know, when I started doing TV, there was a lot of grumbling in the balloon world, like, oh, who is she? Why did she get to do it? No matter that I had been in the balloon world for 22 years and, you know, whatever. But, you know, well, who the heck is she to be America's top balloon expert? Well, I'm the one that has a YouTube channel with 25,000 subscribers and 5 books that the public can go out and get. And when you're talking about the way that the public sees you, not the way that your own industry sees you.
Right.
That's what they're looking for. What external markers, what external leverage, what external things do you have out there that I can go back to my boss and say, this is why we want to hire this one?
Yeah. Wow.
So.
Nice.
There we go.
We got a boatload of why there, which is really nice. Boy, that's fired up. And within that, some how and what and who. So let's just open this up for questions, you know, just so it's a... Anyone on who has something else they want to ask? Chat down here too, if that was anything.
Yeah, once we finish talking about writing the book, then we can talk about the next step, which is marketing and leveraging it.
Yeah, of course. Good. Anyone have anything on what's come up so far?
So I'm just curious, from the start to finish, how long did it take you to do each of the books?
Okay, so my first book, like I said, basically took 3 weeks because a lot of the content was already created in video form. The last book that I just came out with took about a year, because it's called the DIY Balloon Birthday Bible, and I don't have it here upstairs, but if you look on Amazon, you put my name in on Amazon, you'll see all my books. And that book, it took about a year because I was filming all the videos at YouTube Space, and you know, you only can get so many videos done in a day. And so it took a few sessions to get all those videos.
And, you know, I was following you on social when that was going down. Don't blow over that sentence here. Talk about the reality of that.
Of YouTube?
You were actually at YouTube Studios filming your... How does that happen to a mortal?
Okay, so I make my videos at YouTube now.
let's just all, you know, breathe that sentence in. That's kind of a nice sentence.
So basically, YouTube has a program that if you have over 10,000 subscribers, you can apply to be part of the YouTube Space program. And they have one in Los Angeles, one in New York. I think they just opened one in Toronto, maybe one in Tokyo, one in London, and maybe one in Berlin. I can't remember. But basically, once you get into this program, it's a, you know, multi-million dollar soundstage facility where you can book time in one of the stages. You can borrow any and every kind of camera equipment that you want. You can use their editing equipment. The only thing that they won't supply you with is people. So you got to bring your own crew. But short of that, everything is free, including the coffee.
Wow.
Yeah.
10,000 subscribers.
10,000 subscribers.
Sign up for space. And what kind of blocks of time do you get?
Okay, so you can have, at my access level, so in the YouTube world, I have 25,000 subscribers. I am a baby.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm like, you know, mortal people, like normal people are like, oh, that's really awesome. But in the YouTube world, I mean, my friends have 500,000, a couple million subscribers.
Sure.
So, you know, at 25,000, it's like, oh, aren't you cute? You call yourself a YouTuber. But
well, you're 2.5 times what you need to get into get time, which is.
That's right. And I've grown, when I was accepted into the program just about a year ago, I only had 12,000. So I definitely have grown exponentially. So you can have, at my access level, you can have basically 12 hours a month, Those 12 hours can either be split up into 2 6-hour sessions or one for 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. session.
Okay, 12, and that's a month.
That's a month, but it's sometimes it's difficult to get in.
Like the
Fine Brothers have been doing some of their YouTube Red series there, and they've taken up like 4 of the stages. Mm. So some months I couldn't get in.
Is the benefit, we're going way off books here, but I think it's interesting to us, but is the benefit to YouTube that they have more high quality videos on air?
The benefit to YouTube.
Is that why they're doing that?
Yeah, if they invest in their creators will put out more content on a regular basis, which brings more eyes to YouTube.
That's cool.
Which sells more ads, which makes YouTube more money. So,
interesting. Love that.
By investing in their creators that, they also offer classes, and so that's been pretty amazing as well. I learned to edit there. Okay. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Definitely cool. Something to put on your to-do list.
Yeah, it's a good goal.
But the books helped me get there, because I actually found out about it when I was at a media event, and I was, going around giving my book out and everything like that. And so part of my pitch, I was saying, yeah, and I've got, 10,000 or 11,000 subscribers at the time. And one of the people that was there was like, oh, so you could join YouTube Space. I was like, I could join what?
Oh, somebody said that. Wow.
Yeah. So that was how I found out about it. So yeah, everything just kind of goes together. I mean, I don't know that any of these things would happen if it weren't for that one.
Right. Wow. So good. Huge whys. I mean, it's that's the why, and that's you built that case beautifully. What do you say? I mean, you show up somewhere, authors or whatever, and you have some book that's not about something boring, Finances for Dummies 101, or how to rebuild your computer, whatever it is. I mean, that it's a conversation starter as well,
and
that's something that everybody in our entire community has the ability to do, is write something that's a conversation starter.
Yeah, and I think that your cover is really important. There's a couple of things that are important about the cover. One is that in thumbnail form, you can tell what the title is and what it's about. But the other thing is, a lot of people who are going to get the book are, this one is the book that sells the most copies, DIY Balloon Bible for All Seasons. So this one actually sells about one or two a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing pretty good, about 30 to 60 a month or so. But, a lot of people, this is the newest one, the birthday Bible there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I got another review. I'll have to check it out. But a lot of times you'll give people the book, it's a really nice, colorful cover. And they'll just kind of, flip through it and like, oh, wow, that's really cool. Look, it's really thick. There's actually words in it. Like I said, they may or may not read it.
Right.
But just having it in their hand is something so tangible and credible that it gives you huge points.
Interesting that you were able to do this effectively in a Kindle format as well, which is cool.
Yeah, actually, I think the Kindle format is pretty cool because you actually have color pictures in Kindle. Whereas,
gotcha. That is really cool.
It has to be black and white. Just it would be cost prohibitive otherwise.
Oh, I don't think anybody would want how to make a water balloon. That was brilliant.
To make a water weight, which we use a lot of. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. Very good. Okay. That's great. All right.
So, that's where we start with it all.
Yeah, so having a cover, now that other one you held up, the Bible, had a ton of words. Does that show well on a cover?
Yes, okay. So all of them have a ton of words. I am a really big fan of ridiculously long subtitles.
Telling what's going on, right.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Your title is your hook, right? Your title is what's going to, if people see it on the list, that's what's going to get people like, oh, let me check this out. Your subtitle is your promise to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the other reason that I really love really long subtitles is because we live in an age of search.
Yeah.
So, all of these words in your title and subtitle can show up in search. They can show up in Amazon search, which is really strong because people searching in Amazon are looking to buy.
Right.
And they can just show up in search because Amazon is a pretty popular website.
Exactly.
That's why I've caught some flack from it from book purists, who have been around publishing before the internet age. Like, why do you have that many words on it? But that's the reason, because these are the keywords for people who are doing trade shows. What are they looking for? They're looking for branding. They're looking for visibility. They're looking for to customer. I mean, those are the what they're trying to get from their trade show.
You said something a second ago, which I have to dig into a bit. you said book purists.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk about that for a second. What does that mean?
People who have been in the publishing industry a long time, in the traditional publishing industry of, you know, you get a big name publisher to take on your book, and either you do a hybrid model where you have 50,000 copies in your garage, or they do the whole thing and give you a penny for every copy sold, or whatever it is. So with self-publishing, you know, times have changed, and the way that people are both publishing books and the way that they're finding books is different.
Yeah, very.
No longer in the corner bookstore, although interestingly enough, Amazon is now experimenting with building some brick and mortar bookstores.
Wow.
So, yeah, they put Barnes & Noble and, you know, and everybody else basically off the map, and then now they're going to start building their own.
Wow, I didn't know that. What's that movie that Tom Hanks was in? It's coming to life, right? His girlfriend owned a bookstore. Her family was in books, and he was the big business mogul who was
that
Jeff Bezos? I forget the name of the movie.
Was that the Show Me the Money one?
No, that title didn't ring, but I'm not sure.
No, it wasn't the title. That was the catchphrase.
You've Got Mail?
No, that was Tom Hanks. You've Got Mail was Tom Hanks, right?
Yeah, did I say Tom Hanks? That's who I mean, yeah.
Oh, maybe you said Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
I heard Tom Cruise.
Oh, no, not Tom Cruise.
I might just have Tom Cruise on the mind, I don't know.
Probably. It's a good thing to have. Good. So, you know, the thing about book peers, and I wanted to say that, there is a whole different way people are looking at books, buying books. Do you feel like it's a problem? I mean, I talked to you about this when I did mine, you know, but I said, you know, my main goals were to build visibility for my monetization, which is my 30-day sugar-free program, to get on TV shows. And no one in any of those worlds, in the TV world, 25 TV shows, I'm almost half of you. No one in my, who writes the reviews on Amazon, no one in my program has ever said who published that book.
So right.
It is changing. So there will be the book purists who...
It is. And it's only the people like from the old, you know, from the old publishing that might even ask you, oh, did you self-publish? The general public doesn't know. So if you're worried about it, I ask you this. Are those book purists paying you? Are they paying your mortgage? Are you making money from them? And if the answer is no, then who gives a crap what they think? I mean, I'm sorry to say, but you know.
Well,
for the people that are going to give you money. It's for the people that you're trying to build leverage with and trying to build your relationship with.
Well said. And you know, in Showbiz Blueprint, we talk about it. I talk a lot about keeping your eyes in your own backyard and not like getting up on a ladder to see what the others are doing out there. Because right. In that place, we can create who we are most authentically. Wonderful. So yeah, I've never been asked that. And I think really the old book purist, the whole model, maybe has half a generation left. And then
yeah. It
doesn't even exist because, oh my gosh, you know, it's...
Even when it comes to being a bestseller, has anybody ever asked you, is that Amazon or New York Times? That wasn't in marketing.
Only book purists.
But only book purists or marketers who know the score, right?
Yeah, and I never did that. And, you know, there is someone in our group who's very against this kind of self-publishing thing. And he hangs out in book conferences and book... And he says, you know, it's a real bad rash, but it's a bad rash with people who are in that marketing world. I'm so behind you. I mean, I put this out. I sell this. I probably sell at least three every day. And some days when I do a big push or I'm on TV or I was on Fat Burning Man podcast and sold about, I don't know, maybe 700 or 800 in a month. Which,
wow, that's amazing.
That was awesome. I mean, oh, no, in that week. I mean, that I was on.
Yeah.
To be on a podcast that has a million listeners was pretty remarkable. And yeah, I didn't get any emails asking me who published that thing. But it's, you know, can you offer something to an audience? And is it worthy? Does it get good reviews? I think I'm up to 32 or so reviews now. And it's hard to get people to review. I even follow up with people. But
it is hard to get people to review. This book, I think, has 92 reviews now.
Yeah, it's great.
Hey, can I jump in, Barry?
Jump in, yeah. Brad. Yeah, he Brad's actively working on two books. Great, you know, great person to engage in this. Thanks.
Great.
So is it realistic to not only use it to develop a brand, but to make money off the book? Barry, it was nice to hear you talk about your book sales, because it seems like, you know, 2 to 3 a day or 1 to 3 a day, 30 to 60 a month is realistic. Is more than that realistic? Is this something to work towards where, you know, residual money's coming in, or is this mainly a, you know, an expensive business start?
Well, here's the thing. If you look at it as a part of your marketing arsenal, then anything else you get from it is going to be a bonus, right? if you look at it like I have to make money on this, and I have to make all my money back, and I have to make this much more money, it might hit. You might just hit a nerve at the exact right time and be the next, you know, three month long New York Times bestseller run. But, you know, that's not guaranteed, right? Like who could have predicted that J.K. Rowling would be, you know, the biggest book series ever? Certainly she couldn't have when she wrote the first one, right?
Right. Couldn't sell it.
So if you look at it as part of your marketing, you know, tool bag, if you will, rather than a money maker, then when you make money off of it, it's a great little bonus. It's, you know, a little pocket change or whatever. I mean, I make probably $200 to $600 a month off of my books, which is great. It pays a bill, but I don't count on it. So every time it comes in, it's like, hey, here's an unexpected gift.
Yeah. And I don't think, Brad, my perspective on that question is without some real good breaks, if I was on the equivalent of a fat burning man every week, every month, which I'm definitely working towards, there's a lot, you know, maybe you can make some money, but what is it? I get $4.11 per book. And
yeah.
700. So I know that week there it was, you know, a nice $2,800 hit. But yeah,
I mean, if you're gonna dedicate yourself full time to marketing your book and pushing your book, certainly you can make it, an income generator. The thing is, do you want to put that much time into spending, you know, all of your time to market the book versus marketing your services or what you do as your main gig?
And I think also, you know, it also looks at your positioning in the world. Where are you at? You know, Brad, who's talking to you right now, he was on this year's 2000 silver medal USA memory championships from, you know, went to China and competed. So yeah,
oh, wow.
Speaking and you have a book on memory, I think your sales are going to be in a different level than
someone who- For sure. One of the there's two things that you can do to really help you with your book sales. One is podcasts. And radio is another one that also can go really far.
Yep.
And then the other is selling in the back of the room, because people have had a chance to, you know, physically experience you. So it's more than just a book at that point, right? Especially if you sign it or whatever. And those are definitely ways that you can make more book sales and move more books. So, I mean, definitely if you're going to dedicate yourself to it, you can. A lot of people seem to think like, oh, if I build it, they will come, and it's just going to be, it's just going to automatically be a New York Times bestseller, and I'm going to have a mansion and a, you know, cushy book deal. And it doesn't exactly work that way.
Right. What are some, so we mentioned the podcast, the radio, getting on TV, back of room sales. Those are kind of the main arteries for sales. Anything else come up for you?
Well, of course, social media. I mean, you know, putting it out there, and that's really going to be especially your first wave of supporters.
Yeah.
Especially when you're doing like a bestseller drive or something like that, is going to be the people who know you, your friends and family, that your social media followers, the people who are going and buy it because you asked them to.
Yep.
You know, then, I mean, you can definitely continue to push it, advertise it on Facebook. I mean, Facebook, you can get so granular with your advertising. So if you're really targeting the people that are most likely to want or need to read that book, you know, then definitely you can drive sales to it.
And yeah, two other things I'll just add while we're talking about this is building an email list and then utilizing your email list. You know, building an email list is great. Every time someone buys my book, there's a companion website to this book. So people go to ilovememorethansugar.com. They log in. I build a list that way. And, you know, in the book, it'll say, see these recipes for day 9 or whatever it is. Very basic, rudimentary site. I've built over 1,000 people, customers who have come to the book. And then my other big list for Sugar Free, whenever I do an email, which is, you know, weekly, I shoot out something kind of big and fun and meaningful. In the link is always the link to the book. And I sell, there's just a little spike. You know, 10, 20 books every time I write an email out. And it's just like, it's another nice little perk. So
and it's something that's so easy to do. I have in the last book that I wrote, I ran out of space. I actually had to cut 13 chapters out of the book. Now there's different schools of thought. You know, there's some people that will say that, you know, you could divide up your material and make several little books out of it. Whereas I'm more of a, I'm going to give them everything I got and I'll create from new the next one. So you know, with the extra 13 chapters, it was over 400 pages. And I thought that's just too much. It's just too thick. So I had to cut 13 chapters out. So in the back of the book, I set up a page. I said, you know, the book was too long. We had to cut out 13 chapters to get the missing chapters. Come here, sign in, and instant download. So, awesome.
And you you're building a list that way.
I'm building a list that way. And then for my YouTube videos, I have, you know, a little ebook that I offer. Although this is nothing to do with books, but that ebook has built up a list of 9,000 people.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think that we have that. Is that this list here on this screen over here where you have discounts and news?
No, this one is. So this one's actually more intended for my for customers.
That's right. This is customers for your business.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but if you go to balloonutopia.com/25ways.
Gotcha. It's, okay.
It's a really ugly page.
Yeah.
But really effective. 9,000 people.
It's nice to build a list like that. Yeah. Right, there. Just a little squeeze page, yeah. Yeah, this is what you say in the back of the book to go to.
This, well, not this one. I have another one set up in the back of the book, specifically for the download of the 13 missing chapters.
Right, gotcha.
But it's the same general idea. I mean, this is the little ebook that I wrote, which is basically just a picture book of my work. Yeah.
So, great.
And then from this list, I do a boot camp, very similar to this class that you're doing, but specifically for balloon people.
Yeah, definitely.
And right. And you know, from there, that's the list that I tap when I offer the class.
Very cool. Okay, good. Yeah, I love that. You have 9,001 subscribers now.
Yeah. Hey, thank you. Appreciate that. I'm gonna spam you all over the place now.
Yeah. Cool. That's good. So let me just take a look and open the floor. The floor is always open for questions, by the way. Whoever wants to do that.
I have a question. This is Lou.
Great. Jump in, Lou.
Oh, hey, Lou. Hey,
Sandy. Long time no see. So
I've been watching you all over the place in your vacations.
I know.
Working in Tahiti or somewhere. Fabulous life.
Thank you. I love you and I miss you, just so you know.
Okay. Hey, ditto. I don't know why we never managed to connect when I'm in LA. Next time. I know.
Okay, so I'm sure you're familiar with Jeff Walker, the product launch guy.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. So Jeff Walker, he has his $2,000 program, and last year, a year or two ago, he put out a book, The Product Launch Formula, which was like free. You know, I bought it. It was $7 for shipping and stuff. And it was basically all the same information that he has in his product launch formula, except really, really condensed. Yep. And so, which I thought was really interesting. But so, you know, 7 years ago, I put out my Real Secrets marketing course for close-up magicians, which pretty much it's run its course. You know, I'm not planning on relaunching it again or anything like that. And so I was wondering if it would be a good idea to take that course, which is a total of about 300 pages right now, and turning that into a book, and what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. Definitely. And look, here's the thing. Even if you put, as you've seen Jeff Walker do, everything that you know out there, the people who are really into it are still going to spend the $2,000 because they get that much more access and they get the little bit of hand holding or whatever. So I would definitely say, you know, if there's worksheets, things like that, maybe pull out some of those worksheets so that you have a good opt-in, something that they need to come to you to get as a download that you can build a list from, because Amazon doesn't tell you who bought the book. So, you know, something like that, but definitely I, you know, in the marketing world, they say that, you know, don't be afraid to give out your best stuff because people will still come to you and pay for it, even though you gave it away. And so I know this is really kind of counterintuitive, and this is something that it's really funny in the balloon world, because apparently balloon people think that we're magicians, that we have something to hide, and that if somebody knows how to build an arch, they won't hire someone to build an arch. So, we're not supposed to show the public how to build an arch because, you know, then everybody's going to go building their own arches. To which I say, you know, I can watch a video on how to change oil 5 million times and I am not going to do it. So, you know.
No. Yeah.
But so some people will buy the book out of curiosity, and those probably weren't going to be your customers anyway. Some people will buy the book and actually use it and implement it, and that may be that. And some people are going to buy the book, go through the book, and then say, you know what, I really want Lou to take me through this himself. And then they're going to pay the money. And maybe even they're not going to just join the $2,000 course, but they're going to join the $10,000 mastermind version.
And here's a great real life demonstration of what Sandy's talking about. My book is three parts. This part two, the challenge, this is 100% taken from my online course, my 30 daily pages. And people buy the book and say, this is so good, I'm going to come do the online program. And it doesn't matter. It's more of a dosage. It's more of a, it's just more exposure. There's another guy who I do some private coaching with. And he said this group was using some of the stuff to bring a bigger crowd to their audience that he had shared. And at first he was mad. And I said, no. Every single thing they'll use of yours, because then it's going to be so good. They're going to go, oh, and we can bring this guy in. Yeah. So of course, yes, every single thing you have.
That's right. And there's also
Jeff did that for that reason. I mean, I know Jeff, I was chapter four of his book of launch.
Wow. Were you?
Yeah. And I was a PLF case study in his launch. But when I talked to him, he said, every single thing, it's in that book, because then they want to do it with me. And I'm like, yeah, of course.
Exactly.
Counterintuitive as putting your hand in a fire, but makes a lot of sense.
So I have a follow-up question to that.
Yeah.
Okay, so for me, you know, which is my course is a marketing and business development course, how do you think I could use that to then actually book more gigs, like for the end clients? How can I use that as a tool to?
Good question.
Instead of growing my consulting business for other magicians, how can I grow my performance business with that? Or is there a way?
Yeah. So look, I mean, you being the top of the food chain, so to speak, in that you're teaching other magicians how to market themselves, how to build their business, it's still huge credibility to you that you are a professional, that you're a working expert. And so even so, to offer that book to your clients, even though it's not necessarily meant for them, it's still a huge credibility and leverage. And like I said, I mean, I can't, you know, so many will just go like, oh, wow, that's really cool. You know,
yeah,
you've got the ISBN number, you've got the title on the spine, and that may be as much as they touch your book. But that you have it and that your peers are listening to you is still putting you up on that mountain.
That's awesome.
Thank you. So true. Yeah. And it's exactly, I mean, when I heard Lou asking the question, I'm thinking, well, that's exactly what Sandy's done with her business. You know, she's become this expert and authority with TV and books, and yeah, you get hired for the better gigs.
Yeah. Yeah. And you really do. I mean, like this Krispy Kreme job. I mean, it's an arch in five columns, four times. Like, so it's this morning, And then Friday morning, Saturday morning, and Sunday morning. And she wants a fresh build every time. She didn't argue with me about prices. She didn't even ask how much. I could have suggested anything in the world to her. She wanted me. She wasn't calling around, price shopping. Whatever I suggested and whatever the price was, you know, I mean, I'm sure that she had some budget hidden in her mind.
Yeah.
It was like the easiest deal I've ever closed. I mean, I've built that credibility with, I like to call it my tripod, my platform of my TV appearances, my books, and my YouTube videos. And that's my tripod.
Interesting. And some of you guys, the magicians here, will know even more than me. But when Sandy's talking about this, I think about a guy who's done kind of that, Paul Gertner. He's become a real authority. I mean, he's an authority in the magic world. He's respected. He's you know, won all the big awards and been on the TV shows and writes and lectures.
Another one that comes to my mind, maybe just because I was introduced to him in my early days of magic and was kind of in awe of what he was doing with marketing at the time, is Joel Bauer.
Yeah, he's a machine.
He is, who I think is doing more marketing these days than magic, right?
But I don't think he does. I don't think he even owns a thumb tip anymore.
That's funny.
Barry, it's funny what you said about Paul, because I remember actually being surprised that he was an alum.
Oh, Shubba's group. Yeah, I think he was in like one of the first groups we ever did, or second group, yeah.
Yeah, I remember thinking, like, I didn't even think he needed something like this. So that's how much of an authority he is in our business.
Cause, yeah.
Wow.
You know, I was like, Paul Gertner took this thing? And I was like, well, then I should definitely do it too.
Oh, it's funny. Yeah, he was when I first talked to him, I was like, you're Paul Gertner. And he goes, yeah, but I still charge like I'm Paul Gertner. You know, So yeah, he wanted to turn it into capital letters and really came brave with all that and has had good success with that. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Hey, Sandy. So I'm curious, any thoughts for those of us who were sold on the appeal, we're sold on the credibility building, we're sold on the process, but we're sitting back and we're figuring out, what do I need to write about? What's going to speak to my market? Any hacks for those first steps of what the book's?
Yeah. So first of all, let's talk about it a little bit. What market is it that you want to appeal to?
So for me, that's part of the question is, what I'm seeing now is at first I was very specifically niched in speaking to the corporate event industry because that's my market.
Okay.
What I found, I've done a little bit of national TV, and that's casting that shotgun approach has built the credibility for those people as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm at a point where I'm thinking, do I do something that's very tight and very specific and speaks to them, or do I do something that's very broad and grab some, and just trying to figure out what that is. So,
right. So for TV, that you have a book and especially a best-selling book, which we'll talk about in a minute, you know, sure. Taking your book to bestseller is all you need. It doesn't need to be something that's, you know, written for TV or has broad appeal necessarily.
Sure. Sure.
Now, if corporate is the market that you really want to focus on, then what I suggest is that you sit down and think about you're a magician, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So when first of all, when does corporate hire magicians? And what do they hire those magicians for, right? I mean, obviously entertainment, but beyond the entertainment, you know, is it awards banquets, right? Is it customer appreciation events? Is it trade shows to attract people to a booth? Sure. So think about getting to the head of your client for a minute. Why are they hiring you? What sure. problem is it that you're solving for them? And then that's what you're gonna write about. You're gonna, you know, first of all, do your brain dump, just throw it down on paper. Like, what Perfect. Problems are they hiring me to solve? And then, you know, the old marketing formula, right? Name the problem, agitate the problem, and then solve it for them. How is Perfect. Hiring a magician gonna solve it? Then also, you know, create some problems. Well, now you know you want to hire a magician, but how do you make sure you get a good one? How do you make sure you get a magician that's going to be a partner in your program and not a prima donna, right?
Right.
Absolutely. And you talk about a book that someone may never read. I mean, that's, I mean, but, you know, you're yeah. saying the authority piece of it and, you know, that you have this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically that's essentially the, you know, both of my first two books. You know, one specifically for trade show, one is specifically for event planners.
3 a.m. Yeah.
Yeah, three exactly. Yeah. 3 a.m. was when I started. Two was when I got up. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same idea. And it's also your opportunity to tell them whatever it is that you wish they would ask you about, but they never thought of, right? For example, what makes better conditions for a magician? Are you close up or are you stage? Oh, you're
muted.
There we go.
I'm stage.
Yeah. You're stage magician. Yeah. Okay. So you probably hate it when they put you in 360 degrees with no backing behind your stage, right?
Oh, love that. Love that. Yeah. And love yeah. the dance floor between them and the audience. These are all my favorite things. And
right.
Trying to have the entertainment on while food's going. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All that. Yeah. Sure. Those
and I felt so bad because I had Sylvester the Jester come and do my son's bar mitzvah. And I put him in like the absolute worst possible placement and situation for a magician.
Oh, you did, and you knew better.
It was just kind of one of those there wasn't any way around it kind of things. And I just, you know, I apologized profusely, and he thought it was a terrible show. And to this day, 3 years later, people are still raving about it. So obviously, it went better than he thought. But you know, so this is also your opportunity to teach your clients what you think they need to know. Right. It's really going to be a better show if you have pipe and drape so that nobody can see through the other side. Magic is one-sided. It's really going to be a better show if there's, you know, a little bit of separation between the stage and the audience so that, you know, the kids can't just climb up whenever they feel like it. So whatever situations there are that you would like to teach your clients to avoid, this is your chance. And again, they may or may not read it, but
yeah. And on something, I'm just going to pick that up. Even if they don't read it, how powerful can the title be? You know, how,
yeah,
you know, the keywords, the problems that keep them awake, the, you know, that's engaging stuff. And you get the guy who has a best-selling book on, why your corporate event sucks and three ways to make it memorable.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, the same thing. I mean, if they're hiring you to help branding, you know, you know, talk about, hey, we are a partner with you and we make the name of your company the magic word, and we have them, you know, we have the audience repeat it 57 times throughout the show.
True.
Or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I have a question. Sandy and Barry.
Hey, Priscilla.
Hi. Hey. So how...
She's a ventriloquist. Look, her lips aren't moving at all.
That's pretty awesome.
Would it be feasible to try to go with Kindle before you actually go to print?
Yes. Okay. So I was going to talk about this more when we came to, when we started talking about driving it to bestseller.
True.
Okay.
So basically, I recommend putting out your Kindle book about a week before you put out your print book. And the reason for that is that you don't want market confusion when you're doing your bestseller drive. You really want to concentrate all your sales on one format. In terms of mass appeal and actually distributing it to people, in my opinion, I didn't feel like I was an author until I was holding my book in my hand, the physical book. And that's when I was like, wow, I wrote a book.
Yeah.
But in terms of doing the bestseller drive, you want to have a little bit of window of time where it's just available on Kindle so that you can push people to it to get that bestseller.
Yeah. Okay. That's really good. And yeah, we should maybe dig into that place unless anyone's got any more questions about mechanics and whatnot. You know, I think we covered some of what you do when you stare at the blank page, why you'd want to do this thing. And Nathan said, yeah, it sounds like a lot of us are on board, you know, with what to do it. You know, what it looks like. It's a book. We got kind of who we're writing it for. Got where we can get rid of it. So, yeah, you know, maybe we can dig into kind of, you know, what happens to get it to the point where you're selling some.
That's right. So the only thing better than being able to go to somebody and say, here, have a copy of my book, is being able to go and say, here, have a copy of my best-selling book.
You get introduced that way on TV too, which is really cool.
Exactly. And so kind of going back to what Lou said about profit formula, Jeff Walker.
Jeff Walker, yeah.
What Jeff Walker was doing. So this is a really popular way to basically do group buys to get a New York Times bestseller. I'm not going to address New York Times bestseller because it's a different deal. It's, it requires a lot more investment, a lot more money, a lot more orchestration to make it happen. But a lot of times when you see those, hey, just pay the shipping on my book, that's what is actually going on, is you're participating in putting this onto the New York Times bestseller list.
Definitely. Yep.
For Amazon, the bar is much, much lower. But the beauty of it is that only people in the publishing world or the marketing world know that. To the general public, a bestseller is a bestseller. It doesn't make any difference if it's the Boston Times or the New York Times or Amazon's, you know, category or whatever. So a big part of that is getting the people that you can actually reach out to ready to buy on the date and time that you tell them to, because you want to try to concentrate as many sales into a 4-hour window as you possibly can. And so that's the really big important thing about organizing the bestseller drive. And then the other thing is you want to release that Kindle for 99 cents. It's a lot easier to get somebody to go get a book for 99 cents than to get it for $10, right? So that bestseller drive is not when you're going to make all your money on your book. It's when you're pushing it to the top. And then that also is going to help Amazon recommend it more. You'll show up more. And of course you capture those screenshots so that you have the claim to fame of bestselling author.
You've tightened the screw, Sandy. You gave me 6 hours.
I know, right?
Yeah. And I used every one of them. It was good. That's good. And let me, I'll bring something up here, but go into detail a bit more. And how do you get people? So social media is one way. If you have a list, if you have a friends list, and then if you could just talk loosely about numbers, you know, this stuff shifts around all the time.
Right. So,
and there used to be a great website, which you pointed me to, which I think got taken down. It kind of gave you some idea. Yes,
yeah, that one did get taken down.
Yep.
And I'm trying to remember, that may or may not have been put up there by Brendan Burchard or his people or something.
Oh, no
kidding. We're not sure what the origin of that website was. But basically, the first thing is that you want to find a category that's not competitive, right? So just giving you an example from some of my author clients, who a lot of them are, you know, doctors or things like that. And I always tell them, look, if Dr. Oz is coming out with a book the same day as you, we are not getting number one in that category.
Right. We're not doing that.
So you want to do your category research both when you start to think about your book and then also right before your launch so that you can make sure that your categories are still pretty favorable. In general, I would say that if you can find a category where the number one book in that category has a bestseller rank of over 10,000, then you probably have a pretty good chance of getting number one.
Let me make a little of this live for a second here.
Yeah, so if we can go to Amazon real quick.
And you can share your screen if you're more comfortable driving, and I can just highlight you.
Oh, that's okay. Whichever.
Sure, it doesn't matter, yeah.
Okay, so scroll down a little bit here.
Yep.
On Jesse's book.
Okay.
Scroll down some more. Okay, this is actually a book, not a Kindle book. Let's go to a Kindle book.
Yeah, it
doesn't look like this book has seen a lot of sales yet because we don't have any bestseller ranking at all right there.
Right, so... let's see if I do mine.
Yeah,
here.
Hey, this is a good one.
Yeah, this is good.
Okay, and let's go to the Kindle version.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The Kindle version, the paperback version for ranking purposes are treated differently. But when you talk about being a bestseller, it's the title that has become a bestseller. Okay.
He's 28. So, I don't even think about it anymore. That's nice.
Yeah. So what we first want to look at is if you'll highlight this number right here, the 257,445,
mm-hmm.
the Amazon bestsellers rank. Okay. So this is what we're looking for when we look at books in the categories that we might want. We want to know, so let's say we're trying to capture that healthy category. We want to know the number one book, what is their bestseller rank? So yeah, go ahead and click on healthy. And this is going to take us to the bestseller page for this category. And now let's click on vegetarian weight loss. And let's scroll down a little bit.
Yep. So I got this type big so everyone can see it. Yeah.
There we go. Here, okay. So this book, it's BSR right now. And this could change tomorrow.
Man, he
right
did good. Now, this is a couple years old. And maybe he's doing a push or something. That's great.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he just did maybe he was just talking somewhere or something.
Mm-hmm.
But its BSR is 4,963. Now, this is not an exact science, but I estimate that at 4,963, it's probably going to take, probably about 70 to 100 books to beat that.
In that four-hour period. Yeah,
I
should have come and grabbed screenshots when I was on Fat Burning Man a couple weeks ago. That would have been good. I'm sure I hit number one again.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so that's great. So loose numbers right there. Take a look at this. This guy's at 5,000 basically, and Sandy's saying within that 4-hour window, you want to sell 60 to 70 books in that. And I that's along the lines of what we played with when we did ours. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, of course, if this guy's doing an active launch and you're chasing a moving target, that window becomes much wider of how many books you actually need to sell, which is why you want to pay such close attention to what's happening, you know, right before, during, and after.
Nice. Okay, great.
So 10,000 is, you know, when I'm doing the research for my clients, I'm trying to look for categories that I can put them in where the number one book has a BSR of more than 10,000.
Good. And let's take a look at a couple of low carb. What's that?
Okay. Oh, so I wanted to say, if you're seeing a book, though, that's low triple digits or double digits, just stay away. That's a New York Times bestseller.
Yep.
And you're not going to beat it.
Yeah, let's see what... low carb.
So, scroll down there. Oops. 3,795. So yeah. this one just barely has the number one spot from the other book.
Mm-hmm.
So,
interesting. Okay. Yeah. Do you think this is all just big, big stuff here? Oh God, it shifts around when I'm on a big screen here. 22 and Kindle. Okay. So here's the guy.
Let's go to a bigger category. Go to health, fitness, and dieting.
Okay.
Yeah, just like up to the middle. So we're going to climb the category list, right? You can drill
down.
Oh, gotcha. But go to the yep. bigger category. Yep, health, fitness, and dieting. Okay. So in the health, fitness, and dieting, we have a lot of subcategories. And then even within those subcategories, you can drill down even farther. So you want to start by going for the lowest hanging fruit that you possibly can.
Sex.
And if you're really doing well, yeah, there you go. If you're really doing well, then they're going to, you don't have to like specifically put it into the bigger category. If you're having great sales, then, once you hit those benchmarks, they're going to put you into the next category in terms of what they show on your screen. So let's see modern romance. Let's see what kind of numbers Aziz has here. No, the number one. Yeah. With 1,000 reviews there.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, he's got the New York Times thing going. This is big.
So. Yeah, this is going to be a number 73, right?
Yeah,
so this one, Penguin Books. I was going to say this one is probably through a traditional publisher. So yeah, Penguin Books. It is through a traditional publisher.
So the irony on this thing is Penguin Books, every time they sell, is making money from the from this Amazon, not the author so much.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The author is probably getting a very tiny, tiny portion of it. Yeah. But so if the number one book in your category is a 73, find another category.
Find another category. Right.
Find another category. Drill down farther and find something that, you know, and a lot of times what I'm doing on launch day too is I start out with my low hanging fruit and I'm on the phone and sending them emails throughout the day to move into more competitive categories. So I want to make sure that I get my clients the claim of bestseller, but then, you know, if I can, I want to keep going into categories that are really the ones that are most desirable for them.
Right. And you can do that. That's a little bit more than we're going to get into today, but in the dashboard of the Kindle, you can go in and jump your categories around, change your,
Yeah,
you can really play with that stuff.
Yeah.
How many categories do they allow you to be in at any one time?
Okay. So they only allow you to choose two categories. But then there's some like little tricks that you can do to get into more categories. And then sometimes Amazon itself will place you into categories that may or may not make sense to you. Like this book became a bestseller in accounting. I certainly didn't pick that category. Oh my I don't know why Amazon thought that it would make sense for this to be in the accounting category, but it was. You know, sometimes funny things happen like that. But basically, once you choose your categories through the uploader, then you can send in an email to Kindle, basically requesting other categories two at a time. And then the other thing is, you know,
and they're responsive to that. I mean, I was
they are. Yeah. They're very responsive to that. Yeah, and as long as you do it two at a time, chances are that you're going to get two different people that get each email, and you're going to be putting both. You know, putting all of them. And then the other thing is, ideally, you know, if you can then make it an international bestseller. So to get international bestseller, usually only takes like two or three sales in a different country. Like in Germany, for instance, three sales might make an English book a bestseller. In Japan, two sales might make an English book a bestseller. Mm. And so then you are not only a bestselling author, but an international bestselling author.
Interesting. Wow. I don't know that I dug into that when we were doing that.
You probably did get international bestseller because I put it out to some of my people who were in other countries as well.
Yeah. I just didn't snap that, but hasn't slowed me down. It's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. Hey, who's got pictures? I want to be respectful of everyone's time here. We're just a little over an hour. What's coming up? And also, as we all know from Showbiz Blueprint, I like to dig even more into, you know, what's the fear? What's the story going on inside of you that we could help, that you can shine some light on? Because bad stories are bacteria. And when we shine light on them, they die.
Love that.
Yeah. Anyone thinking like, I can't do this. I don't have anything.
Yeah. What are your objections? Why would you guys not do this? Why are you not already scratching down ideas?
Maybe they are.
Or is that why everybody's so quiet?
This was the moment at the Vancouver airport where I handed Simon Sinek my book and he said, "Oh, this is great." And I said, "Yeah, but take off the cover." And it was his. So it was a great moment.
That's very funny.
I told him I went on all these TV shows with his book under my cover.
But it was a prototype.
He loved that.
I love it.
Like wow. Yeah. Very
fun. What's the cost investment to get it going? To get maybe if you just want to start with Kindle or the print version or both? Like what would be the cost estimate to invest in that?
The biggest cost investment is your time. The next cost investment is getting a good cover. And to do that, I recommend going to Fiverr, hire seven different people on Fiverr. Go through the Amazon bestseller list and find some covers that you like and say, I want something that feels like this. So,
yes,
you know, $35 to $50 or so. And, yeah. And then, I mean, if you're prepared to do it all yourself, there's a ton of information out there step by step on how to do it. So it's really just your time.
Yeah.
Now, if time is something that you don't have and you have more money that you want to throw to it, you know, it could be anywhere from a few hundred to several thousand dollars, depending on, you know, how much of it you want to outsource and, you know, whether you want to, you know, whether you want to hire somebody like me to make it a bestseller for you, whether you want to hire somebody who's going to do the formatting for you, all those kinds of things. But if you are kind of that DIY type of person, the investment is very, very minimal.
And it really is, yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the beautiful things about self-publishing. Even when it comes to getting that paperback done, you can buy your author copies at a discount, but you don't have to invest in 1,000 copies to stick in your garage.
Right.
It's print on demand. So you can buy as many or as few copies as you want to hand out. And so like when I go to conferences, I just order it from CreateSpace and have it drop shipped straight to the hotel. I don't even have to schlep it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's pretty big. Pretty good.
And what about Kindles? Oh, sorry.
I was just letting you know that with my hardcover, it cost me $6 to print it. And
my hardcover,
it's 200 pages and it's a BOR piece. It's a proof piece for everything.
Right. And you have a hardcover one, right?
Yeah. It's a soft cover, but.
Oh, it is a soft cover. And so you're paying $6 for printing?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But I'm in Canada too, so it could be a little different.
Oh, right. So so we'd have to translate it that into American dollars, which actually I think right now it would be charged the same price, but because of the way that the Canadian dollar is to the American dollar, I think you're actually paying like 25% less than we are, right? Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, right. It's a little bit cheaper.
So this book here is 244 pages, and I want to say that with shipping, it cost me just under $5 a piece, American.
Yeah.
So and then I sell it on Amazon for $19.95. I think I make maybe $7 per book on it or something like that. And when I sell it live, generally I'll just sell it. I have $24.95 on it, but I've never charged that much. it's marketing.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll usually sell it for just $20 or whatever.
Nice. Okay.
Or package it all five together for, a flat fee or something.
Yeah. So I'll share just a tad of my experience with my person. I met someone on Upwork who did the hard copy for me. She was in South Africa and just did the most amazing job with everything from my cover to the layout. I mean, I see this and no one's ever said there is a certain look that happens with self-published books, and I would be really leery of that. I would be really cautious of making sure it doesn't look like a self, because there's a feel. Create on demand books have a beautiful matte finish. They feel excellent. And if you get the artwork done inside beautifully, I think I spent maybe about, I think all told, I was pretty expensive because it was a big book and there was a lot going on, a lot of moving parts. I think it was maybe $1,800. So, not terrible for the cover and the whole thing. And I really feel proud when I sell them now. And that's something you really want to say. Is this something I want to be proud to hand to somebody? And
yeah.
Do I want to save $200 here?
The other thing that you can do if you have any sort of, in any slight bit of graphics capability is to do a mock-up of what you want and then hire somebody to clean it up for you and make it look better.
Oh my God.
And so that's what I did with all of my books, because I had a very specific idea of what I wanted and I couldn't communicate it. So I basically did it very, very badly and then said, make this look better.
Yeah. And you can do it with hard copy books too. I mean, even down to the fonts or the way the pages are, the margins, how much text, the amount of paragraphing. Line spacing.
Yeah, the little, really little swirly things. Doodles between them.
Yeah, there's little things that our brains say. This is a professional book.
So speaking of that, I want to bring up one more point, and that is that for the hard copy, for the paperback copy, you want to have a minimum of 132 pages. And the reason that this is so important as a benchmark is because that is the minimum number of pages in order to have your title and your name printed on the spine.
Oh wow.
And without that, it's a booklet, not a book. So if you don't have 132 pages, like this one, I believe we came up a little bit short. So I don't know if you can see that.
Notes.
Yep. We added, you can't have blank pages in a CreateSpace book, but you can have lined pages for notes.
Oh, fun. Wow. So, nice. Notes. Hey, there's
my,
kind of some.
In my subsequent books, I didn't need to do that. I had too many pages.
Right. You had to send them into a website.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's something going on. I read an interesting article this recently about Kindle Shorts. This is books like under 50 pages, and they're only for Kindle. But boy, are people racking up the.
Yeah, people are making money with those. I have to admit, I don't know a whole lot about that.
Yep.
Because my focus is more on books as somebody so aptly put it, the three-dimensional book business card.
Yep, exactly. That's a good one, yeah.
But I've heard that people are making a ton of money on those little shorts. It's basically what you would have done with like a giveaway or a JVZoo ebook, but through Kindle.
Through Kindle, you know, for a reasonably cheap price and get some good authorship, followership, bestseller status. You know, one more thing just on the bestseller status. And I think the more you can give to a community and build a following, the easier it's going to be to hit those 60 to 70 sales. Because I don't know how many I hit. I have the numbers somewhere, but I beat it by a two or three. I think maybe I was 250 or something. But, you know, that's sending it out to thousands of people and doing a big campaign and, you know, over the course of a couple of days saying it's coming this day and don't buy it early. And
I'm very proud to say that my last book in pre-launch, I sold in the pre-release, I sold 600 copies.
That's huge, man.
And most of that was people from my industry, even though it's more marketed as a DIY book. But, you know, for $3, they want to know what I'm up to. And for $3, if they get one pearl of wisdom, one thing that can make them more money, it was an unbelievably good investment.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're not kidding. Of course it is. Yeah. Well, good.
And that's how I put it out to them. You know, I put it on all the balloon boards like, hey, this book is coming out. This is my launch day for the pre-release and it's going to be $3. And then at the end of that week, it's going to be $10. So get it now, because even if you only get one thing out of it, you know, and there's 40 recipes in it, like there's something that you're going to learn.
Definitely. For less than the, or for the same amount you're probably going to get for the next Yoda you make out of balloons. You
can exactly.
Recipes
yeah.
for a whole bunch of- Yeah, I love that you turned yours into kind of a cookbook with recipes. That was a really cool idea to do it that way. Cool.
Yeah, it just kind of happened. And yeah, I mean, it makes it easy because then I can record the video, transcribe it, screenshot it, boom, there's my book.
Yeah, good. Hey, so who else has something to jump in? Any questions for Sandy before we shut down?
So on CreateSpace, don't they launch the Kindle and the print-on-demand book at the same time?
You can opt out of the Kindle on CreateSpace, and that's what I recommend you do. I recommend that you do the Kindle yourself directly. Yep. One, because the CreateSpace version is often weirdly formatted.
Not pretty.
For Kindle.
So then where do you go to do your Kindle book by itself?
KDP.amazon.com. And that's going to be it's owned by Amazon, and it's going to be just your Amazon login to use that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then one more thing, and that is when you're putting it out there to all of your friends and family to go buy the book, make sure that you give them an affiliate link, become an Amazon associate. Not so much because of the half penny that you might get in extra commission, but if while they're there, they happen to buy a TV, you get a percentage of that too.
And man, they do. I launched my book in December, which Sandy kind of yelled at me at, and I appreciated that later because it was 2014 instead of it could have been 2015 if I waited another week. But the good side of that was I wanted to get it off my hard drive so I can move on with my life. And I started talking about it early December. And boy, Christmas gifts, I had huge affiliate commissions. And it was fun just to run down the list of things people bought when they were in there buying my iPhone.
Yeah, right?
I get a 24-hour cookie. So for 24 hours, what they buy on Amazon, unless they click on someone else's cookie, you get a commission. And that's 4 to 8%. 4 to 8% on everything they buy. So
right, yeah, depending what type of thing it is.
Bang! That was crazy. maybe the only good thing about publishing in December, when I should have waited, but
was a lot of it like I love me more than sugar, and then like you know six pack of Hershey's.
Yeah, exactly. It was Hershey's and, you know, my favorite chocolate cookbook. You're like really together? Yeah. Must you tell me?
I'll have it with the Diet Coke.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I have a concern about releasing, you know, my marketing course as a book, because one thing that comes to mind is, well, what about the people that pay $250 or $300 for my course, and then they see that I'm releasing this book that has the same information for $10 or whatever it is? It's like, I'm afraid of pissing people off.
Okay, so those people that you took through the course, they had access to you. They had you to hold their hand and to guide them through it. Mm-hmm. And that is worth, you know, about $1,999 of it.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
I mean, that access to you, your time is worth more than just what you're teaching.
And think about our aforementioned Jeff Walker, you know, selling product launch formula for 15 years now. And yeah, boy, what he's done. And that book, you know, besides me being in it, it's a great book. It's,
well, I mean, that right there makes it worth it.
It walks you through PLF formula, though, but boy, that did wonders for his sales. His product, his $2,000 live PLF course has just kicked butt since that book came out.
Yeah, I used his book as the template to relaunch my course just this past year. Instead of investing into his $2,000 program, which I'd seen little bits and pieces of it.
Sure.
But when I got the book, I realized this is the same content.
Right.
Yeah. But
for someone who works hard like you, Lou, and is smart and has been in the world, you can extrapolate everything that needs to be done in PLF from what's in that book and dig in there. Some people needed the handholding, the community, the private group, the weekly Q&As that Jeff gives. But that's the value added.
That's right. Absolutely true.
Yeah, so sometimes people, what they really even just need is just permission. They're paying $2,000 to have access to you for you to tell them, yes, that's a good idea. Go do it.
That was me when I bought
PLF. Yes, and did you do it yet?
What is it
with Showbiz Blueprint? With Showbiz Blueprint. I mean, if you had written a book with all this content in it, I still would have opted into the program because, you know, it's the accountability, it was the Q&A, it was access to you. And that's huge.
Amazing. Yeah.
And that Q&A is huge, right? I mean, you can't ask a question from a book. So you don't have follow-up. You can't go, oh, wait, I don't really get that. Hey, book, what, you know, can you clarify this one point? Or can you tell me exactly how would I do that piece?
Yeah, and we did Showbiz Blueprint a little differently this year as a handful of 2016 folks on here. But yeah, we did the modules Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then a live Q&A Tuesday. And it only took me years of watching Jeff Walker every year to think, oh, Jeff does it with all the modules and then does it a Q&A. I was like, and as I told folks on the end of that group, it was so different than any of the times I did it. I just loved it.
Oh, instead of doing the whole thing live?
Yeah, I mean, for like a bozo for nine times, I would do the...
Oh, my gosh,
Yeah, there's Delta going off, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in my third boot camp right now, and I'm like remaking the slides to teach the exact same things every time, and duh.
I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to do it this year. I said, I can't do it. I'm thinking you're off just because I can't read PowerPoints to people again. I just felt like it wasn't happening. And as a result, our Facebook group has about a tenth of the traffic that... you know, the past Showbiz Blueprint private groups have had because, you know, we get to interact and it was way better. Just, yeah, I loved it. So, yeah, and
it was
time saver
for motivation too, like just to kind of keep on stuff.
Yeah, Malik attended most of the classes at 60 miles an hour and it was just, motivation.
Well, two of them.
I know, I'm just kidding.
I don't want to sound like some irresponsible, person, but.
No. Just
yeah, and I was in driving mode on the app, so.
I know. So I didn't see you moving. It actually looked like you were usually parked outside a gig.
Yeah, one of them I was. Yeah,
yeah, cool.
But to go with what Priscilla was saying, like if you'd had the book, I still would have opted in because it was, just having the live interaction and, knowing that I had to get stuff done because I was going to have to explain myself otherwise.
That accountability, yeah.
Yeah. That really made it infinitely more valuable.
So, Lou, the great takeaway from Priscilla and Malik's piece here and, what we've already talked about is launch it, triple the price for your live thing, and do it with modules and live Q&A, man. I just... your reputation goes way back. You've got a name in this thing, and adding a bestseller authority to that piece would just be.
And if by some chance you do get one person that complains or something like that, offer them to come to your live event. Sweeten it for them.
Oh, and you will. Gosh, we should spend a moment running through my email folder of haters. Gosh, there's so many good ones over the years. What the hell? Who are you to? And every one of those, I just write back, I can't wait to buy your course when you put it out, and I will.
Yeah, it was the craziest thing to me when I got on the Today Show, how all of a sudden in the balloon world, like, my standing, like, dropped. Like who the hell are you?
Oh, yeah,
like,
it's great.
Really?
And what we do is we hold a great mirror up to people, and the conversation, unfortunately, going on inside their head is, I really should have done this.
Right, yes.
I really should have done this. And that's fine, it's what it is. I often have the conversation in my head, I shouldn't have done this. So it's great. It equals out. It's just fantastic.
I'm laughing because I definitely saw that more people were getting on TV after I did.
Yeah.
I made it a thing that people wanted to have balloons on TV, I guess. Or they had something to point to and say, hey, I can do something like this. But I'm laughing because now I'm taking a little break to be with my family and to spend some time with my kids. And so, but people could do it. It's, and they're still not. So, I think it's very funny. Like, you know, don't hate because I actually took the action.
Well, yeah, and you and I invested a lot of time, and you know, that workshop we met in was 10 grand, and you know, there was 4 days of our life locked in a small room with questionable egos, and it was just great.
Small egos.
And I'm, you know, including myself in that 10 person group. But yeah, you know, it was a big investment of time, and a lot of it was what we're talking about here, giving ourselves the permission, the confidence to do it, the accountability,
That who am I? That voice inside your head that says, who am I that I could put out a book?
Yeah, man. You're the one who did it.
You're the one who's doing it.
Yeah, who am I? I think I even said in that group, but you know, yeah, we had to talk about some of what was going on in our head in that group. And mine was, you know, who am I to talk in the health world or anything? You know, college was the crappiest 2 weeks of my life. And you know, who am I to write anything or talk about health, you know? But, you know, we got over it. And, you know, you and I were the champions of booking shows in that room, I know. But that was good. It was good affirmation. It was and as I told Clint, that was the best amount of that money I'd ever spent, because we got done in 4 days, I could have easily spent 10 years and never got done. So that was buying time real cheap. Yeah, so cool.
I have another question.
Yay.
How do you go about, do you copyright? I assume you would copyright your title and your content before it goes out in Kindle?
Okay, you cannot copyright a title.
Okay.
You can't copyright a title, but as soon as you publish the book or even just put it to paper, there is a copyright implied on it as far as the content therein. So, So, and definitely you'd want to put a copyright page on your, you know, on your book or on Kindle, copyright 2016, to either your name or your company name.
Right on the inside. Yeah. And that's good.
But the title itself is not copyrightable. So if there's a title you really like of an old book, it's fair game.
There's a lot of books with the same title in the world.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazes me how often I see that.
Which, sometimes can be a marketing tool in itself to take a title, that's famous and twisted or something like that.
Right. Just don't copy one, write the first book and call it second edition. That may be a problem.
No, don't do that.
Finally, the second edition. This guy's been dead for 40 years.
Yeah, yeah, amazing.
Yeah, interesting. Well, good. Sandy, can't thank you enough. Any more questions? Is it all right if people reach out to you? Do you want to just talk for a second what you do for your clients in case?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you guys my book website, which is expertbook, the number 4 and the letter U, expertbook4u.com. And you might recognize one of my testimonials on that page.
Yeah. It's me,
And so basically what I help people do is, you need to write the book, but then I help you take it to bestseller. And one of the things that we can do, if you are a person who works well under pressure, is that we can do your book as a pre-release. Well, you can do it on your own as well, but I can make it, you know, less headachey for you. But you can release your book as a pre-release, which basically means that you can release the title, release the cover, so you do need a cover, and then you have up to 90 days to actually release the full book, the manuscript.
And the massive benefit, which I did, and I didn't even think about that until you just mentioned that. We did that with mine. I didn't even think about it. But yeah. The Kindle version wasn't turned in. But what it does, and this is such a remarkable, I mean, you talk about something that didn't exist. This is the folded napkin for the caveman, really. This lets you test a title. It lets you send traffic to it. It lets you hold a webinar. You know, see, can I build this? Can I build a following? Is there interest in this thing? And what do I need to shift? What can I learn from my audience while I'm doing all this pre-work?
It also gives you the bragging rights to say, my book was so popular, it became a bestseller even before it was released, which in the past was something that was only the big, big publishers could do, right? Yeah. Like the new Harry Potter book came out, right? We pre-ordered it, I think, like 6 months ago. Right. I mean, so big publishers get much more time than us little people. We only get 90 days, which actually you have to have your manuscript turned in about 10 days before the release date. Right. So it's slightly under 90 days that you actually have. But if you're one of those people that works best in the 11th hour, then that's going to give you a hard deadline that you have to meet. And for me personally, I work really well in that kind of space that, you know, when I'm up against a deadline like that, that's when I'm my most creative and my most, all the ideas come to me. Whereas, you know, if I have an open-ended, you know, no deadline, no accountability, it will never get done.
Yeah. And that was fun. I remember, I'm having so many memories as you talk about this. When I was doing mine, it was the day of, and we were in that 6 hours, man, we were like texting and you're like, do this, call this, change yeah. that. It was really, it was effective to just see those numbers climb. It was really, and yeah, then once fun, we had right? the screenshots, which I showed a while ago, I just went, okay, good. Now it doesn't matter what happens. We got that done. And it was really cool. Used it a lot.
It's a rush. It's a rush. And on launch day, don't be afraid to private message everybody that you've ever had a conversation with in person. The worst they're going to do is ignore you. You know, I mean, the best they're going to do is go spend their 99 cents.
Yeah, exactly. What is all this? Oh, funny. Oh my gosh. Somebody from the group just sent me a cool screenshot of their book they're working on. I love
Yay!
That. Oh my gosh. So cool. Excellent. Well, good. Hey, any other questions? We'll turn Sandy loose. We did it in 90 minutes. A ton of information. Really cool. And, thanks a ton. It was really nice, Sandy.
Now I'm assuming after that 4-hour window, you raised the price. Is that correct?
No, I would recommend leaving it for a week.
A week, yeah.
Yeah, because there's some people that really want to get to it. They want to get it, but for whatever reason, they weren't able to. So I don't usually change the price until a week later. That gives, you know, the people who may be actually interested in the material a chance as well. But then definitely after the week, raise it to the price that you actually want it to be.
It's really funny, and I raised mine, I think, about a week later to $5.99, and it's never trickled off. I think there's very little difference if somebody wants it versus if you're sending someone, hey, do me a favor and buy this.
Yeah.
That's the big difference. Well,
and my books, I have to release at $2.99 because they have 500 pictures in it. The file size is just too big. Amazon won't let me do 99 cents.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, sucks up too much of their bandwidth.
So let's see. One more thing that I wanted to tell you. I just had it a second ago. Give me 1 second and then I'll let you go. Tip of my tongue. I had it right there. It was something really... about raising the price. Oh, yes. Now I remember. Okay. So with your Kindle book, if you don't submit it to any of the other ebook companies, right? Don't submit it to Nook, don't submit it to iBooks, anything like that. Then you can participate in Kindle Select. With Kindle Select, you can put your book every quarter either to put it on a promotion, like a countdown promotion where it'll be 99 cent one day, $1.99 the next day, $2.99 the next day, et cetera, or that you can release it for free for up to 5 days every quarter. So with one of my books, I did release the book through all of the other companies and was ineligible for Kindle Select. With all of my other books, I didn't do it through the other companies, and I've gotten more from doing those free promotions and the advertisements and the countdown deals than I've gotten from all of the other sources of ebooks combined on the one title that I did.
Interesting.
So I think I'm making like $50 every 6 months from those other titles. I mean, let's face it, Kindle is the 10,000-pound gorilla.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, please jump in. That's great.
No, I was about to change to another.
No, I was just going to touch on some of the royalties. I just looked up my Kindle, and I think I sell more paperback books. I haven't looked lately, but this is last 6 weeks, $400.
Not bad.
Yeah, and this may have been right before I was on Fat Burning Man. I think this may have ended. And unfortunately, I guess I could go back and look at what that was that week, but you know. Not sitting there and I'm not doing anything with it right now. Just putting a tag at the end of my emails.
Nice.
Yeah. It's not going to make us rich, but I tell you, there's no bad.
That's right. Hey, it might pay a car bill, right?
Which I just got on Sunday. How'd you know?
The other thing that I wanted to tell you was, I just told you about Kindle Unlimited. It'll come back in a second.
Yeah.
2 a.m., right?
Yeah, 2 a.m. and I wanted to grab something while we were still talking about royalties. Sorry.
Yes. No, that was a good idea.
Yes.
If it comes to me, I'll send it to you later.
Yeah, it wasn't that important. All right, you guys. Well, good audience today. It's funny to look around here and see who chose to come and spend an hour and a half dedicated to a book. I think these are all cool people. Priscilla covers herself in so many different acts, small acts, and she lives in Las Vegas, from, you know, snakes to a grinder girl to, you know, belly dancing to champagne dress. So, you know, yeah. There's an amazing book in there that would probably appeal to thousands of people, millions of people who will never live that life, but, you know, inside secrets of a, you know, the different kind of Las Vegas showgirl, kind of fun ideas.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really cool. Love that.
I'd like to read that one.
I know. It does sound good. There's a lot going
on. So I put my email in the chat log there. So if anybody does want to get a hold of me.
I will copy that over to the notes that I post where I post this replay. So
yeah.
Well, good, everybody. Thank you, Sandy, 100 times from everybody.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you guys for coming out this morning and sitting with me and listening to me go on and on and on.
Go to sleep.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go to sleep. Have a good day.
You guys too. You guys too. Right. Now the caffeine is finally kicking in, so I might be up for a couple hours.
All right, now you can go to sleep. All right. That's right. Hey, thanks so much, Sandy. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.